The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We're back. We've had quite a week here trying to unpack what has been going on for many weeks in Tuscaloosa. And we're really excited to welcome another guest we think that has a very good perspective. Ryan Phillips with Tuscaloosa Patch, his latest writing about a most absurd circus. Much of the criticism from Ryan aimed at the media. Ryan, many thanks for joining us. We have certainly appreciated your coverage and can't wait to get deeper onto this subject.
And thanks so much for having me, Paul.
Let's start with just where we are, and then we'll go backwards a little bit. But certainly Nate Oates speaking today, I don't know what else he can add to an absolutely crazy week, but do you think anything else is going to occur, at least as far as the basketball part of this conversation?
I really don't think at this point we'll see anything further. They've already been pretty clear that there probably won't be any charges, any additional charges brought up. We're kind of getting to the grand jury phase of it now. And with such a short distance to go in the regular season, I really don't think we'll be to the grand jury phase, before the season wraps up. And that's something I think a lot of people have to be patient with. We're getting really into like the meat of these proceedings, and this is when it will drag out. So I think people need to be patient with that. But at the same time, there's a lot, and I know you've seen it with the fan base, that there's a lot of concern about the state of the program, about, any possible, quote-unquote cover-up. So that's made things really complicated on the ground. I'll be the first to admit that, being a local community news reporter, that when you have all – and that's kind of what my column addressed, is when you have – so many of these national pundits weighing in on things, that it really can complicate, the day-to-day, dogged reporting on the ground that me and a lot of my colleagues are doing.
Ryan, I want to get into that because you address it, and we spent a little bit of time early on, really the day of Nate Oates' press conference, but it has been remarkable to see, especially in an age when I realize on the political front a lot of stuff is thrown up against the wall, but I'll let you pick it up. But I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this. So what and why do you think this has occurred?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with the political end of it. I'm definitely seeing some commonalities with the different camps, and I'm not going to get into all the politics of it. But again, it goes back to when you have these folks who are detached, who are 1,000 miles away, couldn't point out Tuscaloosa on a map, weighing in, openly peddling false information. That makes our job that much more difficult, because then the narrative is set on such a wider scale. And I know you worked in newspapers, like you definitely understand that, like seeing that from the local level translate to national coverage, that it almost becomes... I wrote this in my column that I felt overmatched and out of my depth, because we had reporters there I'd never seen before that were covering this story. And I had mentioned that, by the time I got home, there were already follow-ups written on it. So what is a lowly, ink-stained wretch at the local level? How am I going to approach this and be able to stand out and be viewed as objective and truthful in my reporting? And I think that's something that I'm not the only one having to reckon with that. But it has complicated everything. I had mentioned to one of my colleagues that this represented kind of the sum of all fears to me. That, we knew, and it was being talked about openly on the street. I love that a lot of people have acted like that people in the local media, national media, have covered any of this up. People have been talking about it on the street since the night it happened. That was, one of the very first, you probably got half a dozen messages, in the 24 hours after the shooting that said, hey, do you know these players that were also involved? What do you think their role was? So when you mix all that's working in concert together, it's, like you kind of touched on, I've been in this business over a decade, and I can't say I've ever encountered a story that was so nuanced and just complicated.
Ryan, let me ask you about there, because yeah, I mean we're quite a few hundred miles away from Tuscaloosa, but you know, I mean we had heard the Brandon Miller rumor. You alluded in your column and what you just got through saying, knowing all that, that if you were hearing it, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, then certainly the school was aware of it. Do you have any idea why the university didn't jump on this a little bit more quickly? I'm not saying they needed to release that. That's a very dangerous thing to do, but at least perhaps be more prepared.
And you're right. We're in uncharted waters right now. I think that the administration at the university is. I think it gets complicated when it comes down to what they can release, especially when we're talking about a capital murder investigation. You know, that a lot of times, you know, normally what we're dealing with, what they're dealing with is a kid might get a DUI or might, you know, be involved in some kind of minor implication. But this is a capital offense. So I would imagine from the top down, it's kind of been damage control made since day one. But at the same time, I don't envy anybody in that position that, you know, do we release that Brandon Miller and Jaden Bradley were at the scene when this occurred, if they haven't been charged, if they're cooperating with the investigators, you know. And I think that's where this really kind of gets complicated for everybody involved, you know, especially us in the media, that several of us knew about it. But I mean, it's kind of, it goes back to the what you know and what you can prove are two different things, right?
And Ryan, you know, there's one thing to be have a big story, but it's a very inflammatory and perhaps defamatory story by linking a player there without really knowing what you didn't know.
Absolutely. And we've seen, I'm not going to name names because I really, you know, I'd like to focus more on the story and getting justice for the victim. But there was one outlet that I don't know if it was erroneous or if they did it just to solicit hate clicks, but are openly saying that it was Brandon Miller's gun that was used.
Right.
No,
I've seen that.
And nowhere in any of this has that ever been implied. So it is. I've never seen anything like it in terms of, because then when you have that narrative come out, there are people who are reading this that are, again, thousands of miles away, that you can even see them in the comments, that they're immediately calling for Brandon Miller's head and assuming that whatever they're reading is true. It goes back to, if it's on the internet, you know, it must be true. And I've just really never seen anything like it.
Well, I want to get to that because I think a lot of, this is obviously a talk show. And people are, of course, entitled to their views, even if they're absurd based on erroneous information. But based on your column, you point at Dick Vitale, who is followed by, you know, many, many people. He's very prominent. He tweeted, he was shocked and outraged and said that Brandon Miller shouldn't be in the game on Wednesday night. But it seemed to be like his information, I haven't talked to Dick and really don't care to, was coming from, as you call them, hucksters in the national media. One in particular that you point out was Clay Travis, who you described, and I read this yesterday, as a right-wing provocateur and shameless dilettante. Pick that up, because normally we don't ask journalists about other people that cover, but it seems, based on what you've said and just common reading of social media, that he has been by far the most outspoken.
Absolutely. And with Dick Vitale's comments, he's one of the most respected people in basketball, and I'm not going to disparage him, but it's more that I don't think you fully understand the situation. I don't think you understand the facts that they've been laid out. And to me, to make a presumption like that we should just go ahead and suspend him, you know, even when the DA's office has already said he's not going to be charged, when his statement came out basically jibed with everything that we were given in court, you know, that I'm just sitting there kind of scratching my head, like, what do you have to gain other than some likes and retweets? Because, again, it just doesn't jive with the narrative we're seeing on the ground. Nor do I think that it's a fitting punishment. You know, like, I mean, I think I wrote this in the column. Were you going to suspend him for cooperating with investigators? Like, they've even said that he's cooperated since the moment it happened. And then we can get into all the other, you know, like with the statement that he mentioned. But to just automatically, you know, hold somebody guilty like that. I just think it's irresponsible.
Yeah, I mean, and Ryan, I was on a program on ESPN. Let's see, it was yesterday with two of the most prominent people at the network. You know, one of whom is an accomplished journalist in his past career, and the other one is, you know, arguably the best-known person the network employs. And they were simply reacting to the news as if it had just happened. And I tried to explain gently that most of this was in the wash early on, and they were finding out about that for the first time. I'm not criticizing them because they're doing the same thing everybody else is doing. It looks like this story just happened on Tuesday with all, and the first notification most of us had was the overreaction.
It is, and I wrote this in my column yesterday, that it was the difference in me being asked to talk on a local radio station and me being requested to be on national television talking about it. That when it came out that Darius Miles was charged along with Michael Davis, that it did. It was a big story. It got a lot of traction. But like I wrote yesterday, that it really kind of persisted as a local story after that. Because then we were, you know, kind of waiting for the preliminary hearing, getting different responses from, you know, the administration, the coaches. But it's really hard to put into words because it's all, this blew up so fast.
And by the way, Ryan, few people really knew Miles. He was obviously good enough to be on the team, but he was hurt. He wasn't a major contributor. While everyone knows Brandon Miller.
Absolutely. He's one of the most famous players in the country right now. And that kind of goes back to my whole sum of all fears analogy, that it is. It's one of those situations that if his name just comes out, then nobody's going to win in that situation. Because the rumor mill will run rampant. Clickbait, as you know, will establish itself in the narrative. And then what's at stake? Like, you know, is that really getting justice for the victim? Is that due process? Not to me. I'm not a lawyer, you know, but I have covered more murder cases. I'm not a sports reporter. I'm more of a hard news, politics, crime type reporter. And I hate to keep saying this. I've just never seen anything like it. It's just the sub-narratives have taken on a life of their own with it.
Ryan, finally, this is where we are on February 24th. Everyone knows how good Alabama is, and it's pretty obvious now. Nothing is going to change with Brandon Miller. He is on that team until the final moment of the basketball season for Alabama, which very well could be playing for a national championship. I know I'm asking you to speculate as a journalist, but knowing what we know now, I don't think there's going to be any undoing of this story and the narrative, because it still continues to be the same narrative that you alluded to. Where do you think this goes from here?
I think it'll only get worse. I was on a radio show yesterday and mentioned that I think the farther along this goes, the deeper into the postseason we get, I think the more the conjecture will ramp up. Because like I said, I really don't think that we're going to be, you know, I doubt we're through with the grand jury phase before the tournament's over. So I really do think it'll only ramp up. And the analogy that I've been using, you know, I know a lot of people have watched this new Bullies of Baltimore documentary, that, you know, Ray Lewis was acquitted of murder, but that's still figured in really prominent into that documentary. And that cloud still hangs over him to this day. I really don't see the situation being any different. Just for the sole fact of how fandom is, especially with how heated the Alabama-Auburn rivalry is, that I've already seen people at each other's throats about this. And really people at each other's throats that have very little in terms of the facts. So I don't see it getting any better. I don't see it cooling off. I think the more successful the program is, I think the tighter the microscope will be on them.
Ryan Phillips, a local journalist covering this story. Ryan, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. We don't look forward to talking to you again, but I presume we will because of the circumstances. But thank you for making time for us, and we will see you soon.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Ryan Phillips, whose piece, A Most Absurd Circus, is really one of the more interesting and compelling articles that have been written about this case, just in terms of the reaction, overreaction, rush to judgment, feeding frenzy, all of this which has been occurring since Tuesday afternoon. We'll take a short break. Your reaction when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
There's breaking news and a suspension to report concerning Tennessee baseball. The university has suspended Tony Vitello for this weekend's games. The university and Coach Vitello are working collaboratively with the NCAA to address a violation in the program. And Vitello will be out with Josh Elander acting as head coach, and we'll provide an update on Monday. So one of the top teams in the country, remember, they were the number one team last year. Probably, what did KP told us last week? He thought they were the best baseball team he's ever seen. Squirrel is one of the best callers we've ever heard. Good afternoon.
What a surprise. There's a violation in the Tennessee program. Who would ever think that's possible? Great call. I've been a little under the weather this week, and it's allowed me to kind of listen in and absorb all these facts. And it was a great call by AJ today because it was short. But I just found it ironic that the number two leg humper wannabe spent his whole call complimenting Justin from Tulsa, the number one Paul Feinbaum leg humper wannabe. When, again, it was, I appreciate him keeping it short. But I've got a gym update.
Okay.
You know, I was a little bit concerned. You know, he sounded weak past few days. Wouldn't you agree?
I think he's, I don't want to alarm anyone, but I think he sounded sick.
Yeah, he did. He sounded horrible. And so I picked up the phone an hour or two ago and gave him a shout. And he sounds 100% better, for one thing. You know, his voice is back to normal and sound 100%. And he told me to pass on to everyone that his condition's not life-threatening, and he's on the uphill side, and he's going to be around for another day or two. So I imagine you'll even hear from
him. I don't know why, Squirrel. Just the idea of you and Jim, it's kind of like, you know.
That blows your mind, don't it? Because we used to have some ironic, some epic phone feuds back in the day. And again, he wished death on me on air many times, at least two or three or four. I'm not sure. He wished
death on me. To me, it's like, I mean, you're like two superpowers. It's like Putin and Biden talking, or Xi and
Putin. Don't compare me to Biden or anybody, man. Please, my God.
Okay. Would you rather me compare you to Putin or Xi?
Neither one. I don't want to be in none of those categories, man. I'll just stay Squirrel.
Anyway, regardless, but, I mean, the idea that you and Jim talking are very large in the Feinbaum world.
Well, like I said, you can only take this show so serious. You know what I mean? Let's put it that way. Okay. And Jim's a good guy deep down inside. You just got to peel back the layers. But talking about what's going on in Tuscaloosa now and all that, and I've kind of stayed out of a lot. Like I said, tried to listen to a little bit of this and that. But forget about who brought the gun there. Wasn't the actual shooter the guy who pulled the trigger from Washington, D.C.?
Either that or Baltimore. He was a friend of Darius Miles.
Well, basically. Yeah. Right. But, you know, like I said, this, like we said a few weeks ago when we talked about how when you and I were in our 20s, we never had no worry about getting shot at 1 or 2 in the morning out on Cumberland Avenue. It just wasn't a thought.
Yeah,
with us,
I mean, the biggest concern I had, Squirrel, at 2 or 3 in the morning were maybe eating too many crystals.
Well, it was Sam and Andy's for me.
I ate there too, but the later, Sam and Andy's was 12:30, 1 o'clock. Crystal was like 3:30 or 4.
No, 3:30 or 4, I was already back in Oak Ridge.
Well, you didn't live as hard as I did.
I'll assure you I did, Paul. You probably
partook in better things for your health than me.
Well, maybe not. But getting back to my original point about
getting
this whole shooting
being
is, you know,
a conservative Mississippian.
You know, talking about shootings, I feel like, you know, I live on the Myrtle Capital corridor of the United States, I-55. You've got Jackson, which is currently the Myrtle Capital of the country per capita. And right below it, you got second place New Orleans. And right above me, you got Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis. And Memphis is well on its way to taking the title.
Yeah, Memphis has 300 murders per year, and New Orleans has around 300. Jackson is a couple hundred, but it's a small city. But again, they've increased the past couple of years because a couple of years ago, the liberal media decided it'd be a great idea to promote rioting and burning in this country and in these cities, and this stupid-ass slogan called defund the police. And they did. They defunded the police. They demoralized them. A lot of them retired. A lot of them quit. Mm-hmm. And crime has increased. And the Washington, D.C. attitude came to Tuscaloosa that night. That's the whole problem right there. So, again, when Augie said that is college sports morally declined, I busted out laughing. The whole country's morally declined. So, again, I'm not surprised by this. Kind of numb by it. I feel sorry for victims like innocent children that get shot. I don't feel sorry for victims involved in parties that shoot at each other. I'm sorry. But thanks for listening to me. Have a good weekend. Aloha.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back here Friday afternoon. Don is up next. Hello, Don.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
This thing that everybody's coming forth with all this information. It's a capital murder case, okay? So it carries the death penalty. So it's a very serious case. And it's just now the work's just getting started. Once you got him in jail, that's one thing. But now you've got to get the case. The district attorney, they don't operate on whether the guy is guilty or not. It's whether they can get a conviction.
Right.
And so that may be the problem with the player, Miller. They may not have information, you know, but the investigation is just in the early stages. There's no statute of limitations on capital murder. So theoretically, the
on down the line, they may run across some business. I've done it in my career running a reluctant witness. They came forward, they could drag him right in there, and he could be up on, you know, charges,
Don, let me ask you a question. I mean, could it be possible that right now he is more important as a witness than he would be as a suspect?
Right. Yeah. It says the key word in that statement they made was cooperative witness.
Right.
Yeah. He is a witness right now, but that doesn't give him protection against some
correct.
Other witnesses that saw. See, the prosecution has to turn over all their evidence to the defense, and so they get to talk to the same witnesses, take statements from the witnesses. They may run across some witnesses that have a different version of what's going on. So I'm saying, you know, theoretically.
Yeah, Don, help me with that, because it's not like I've ever done this, but I would think everybody has spoken to within a long period of time has already been interviewed. So there's not, we have a lot of questions, but they probably don't have as many.
Well, no, the investigation like this goes on and on, because you talk to one witness, they tell you, well, so-and-so was there. Then you go talk to them. So the DA sits down with you, and you have a meeting, and he looks at his case, and he says, this is what I need. This is where I'm weak. They won't take it to the grand jury if they don't think they got a chance to win.
Correct.
They definitely won't take it to trial. So this thing is going on and on, and he could go on and get in the NBA or whatever, and still, but since there's no statute of limitations, you know, I had a reluctant witness that didn't want to come forward, and I got a hold of her 2 weeks before the trial. And she had some key information. And so you never know. You never know. But the thing is that there's way too much everybody jumping this way and jumping that way. The work is just really starting. And it's not as simple, oh, we got him in jail, that's it. Then that's when your work starts. You have to go out and you work with a DA. He'll give you a list of people to talk to. He'll give you information that he would like to have. And then you go out and you do that, and that you talk to one. They say, oh, well, so-and-so was there, and you go talk to them. So that's when the work really starts. So by the time the trials may be about 2 years away.
Yeah, I would think murder trials are normally not most trials don't happen quickly, but a murder trial would be way down on the list unless the defendant wants a speedy trial.
They can ask for a speedy trial, but they use stone in a capital murder.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey,
the DA has to decide whether or not he wants to seek the death penalty. Now, he can seek the
Don, too, you have two people involved, and I don't know, maybe I've watched too much TV, but... you could be going to one, the one that didn't pull the trigger, and you could try to turn him against the other one, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they do that, and they'll turn on each other, that's what I'm saying.
Sure.
They'll turn
kinda
on
like
each
this
other
show.
Normally and try to let, you know, the one that's already said, well, I was drunk on tequila all day. Well, that's going to be his excuse. Well, that's no excuse. So under the law, that's no excuse, but he's already laying the groundwork. Well, I was drunk all day on tequila, and I don't know what I was doing.
Right, okay.
It won't fly. But, yeah, they'll turn on each other. That's what I'm saying. But there's also, there had to be a lot of people there. So there's some witnesses they hadn't come across. You got reluctant witnesses that don't want to get involved. And so, but you talk to Joe, and he'll tell you, well, Bill was there, and you go talk to Bill. And then you gather all this information and take it back to the DA so he can build his case. By the same token, he's got to turn all that over to the defense attorney.
Correct.
And they get to talk to the same people, and they get their statement, and they'll try to, you know, get a slant on it to favor their side. So the work is just starting, and I'll just jump into conclusions and yada hoda yada. It don't mean nothing right now.
Don, thank you very much for that very interesting report there. Dennis is up next in Georgia. Hey, Dennis.
How you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
A long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you.
Can't believe I actually got here that quick.
Well, we're glad you did.
Well, what I called about was mainly to tell you how much I enjoy what you do. And one statement over what this week's been all about for you was, wish I could say I'm surprised by how the administration there has handled this. I'm not really amazed, but still it's a surprise. I wish I could say I was surprised. But, and also, I haven't heard anybody say this. They may have said it. But there will be a civil case come out of this eventually. So there's still a lot way to go. But watching you handle this all week, Paul, shows me what a pleasure it is and how good you are at your profession. That's what I called about, was to tell you that. And all the men and women that work around you, for what y'all do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dennis. And yeah, I appreciate you mentioning everyone. He didn't mention you, though, Randy. I-Man is up next. Hey, I-Man.
Hey there. Hey, Paul. I'm going to mention Randy right off the bat. Big shout out to Randy. Woo! I tell you what, Randy's right on top of things.
Randy is liked by everyone connected to this show except one person.
You know what? Give that man a raise. He deserves at least Donald Duck money.
Well, here's the problem, my man. Randy doesn't need this. Randy's got a yacht. Randy just does this for fun.
I'm sure he does.
He doesn't want to pay the extra money to watch his show on cable, so he just comes in every day.
You know, with everything that's going on, and you know, on this show this week, aren't you glad you are who you are? And I'm glad who I am.
Because
I tell you, Paul,
right.
Let me ask you this: when you go home and take your foot out of your mouth, is it usually your right foot or your left foot?
The right foot usually, because I have a harder time with my left.
That's why you quit wearing them Bruno Mali shoes, because you gummed that one up, didn't you?
How did you know that?
hey, if it don't fit, you must have quit, and you got to quit wearing them. You know, Paul, I tell you what, I'm so proud to be me. I don't have to worry about not taking my gun or anything like that. I don't have to talk to my lawyer this morning. I don't have to talk to your lawyer tomorrow morning. I don't have to do depositions. I don't have to look over my shoulder. And you know, it's such a pleasure just being me. Just being me. That's the real deal. That's real money. You know, Paul, I'm just, where would we be right now if it wasn't for all these middle-aged people that did not, you know, they were glued to Charlie's Angels and to Ironside, and they all stayed at a Holiday Inn Express and ate a damn muffin. They know everything about the law. Everything about the law. And what they all fail to realize, this is multi-million dollar business. This is well damn money. They gonna do what they gonna do, and you just buy your damn ticket and sit in the cheap seats. Paul, don't you long for the days when Pat Dye comes on and he's explaining to everybody why Brent Fullwood didn't go to school, and they wanted him kicked out of school, they wanted him railroaded, they wanted Pat Dye's job because Brent Fullwood didn't go to school. Now look where we're at. Look at these crossroads. Paul, hell, just 2 months ago, you wanted Hugh Freeze fired if he damn tweeted.
By the way, I still have not seen a tweet from Hugh Freeze.
And you know why? Because tweeting ain't a damn good thing. But you can go to a nightclub, take a gun and a ski mask and gloves, and take your crack pipe. You can do all kinds of things.
Okay, we're enough of the call was bad, but it finally went off the road. We're up against a break. We have we'll get an update on the Kermit Davis situation. He was fired today at Ole Miss in the next hour. Who could be replacing him? And we'll send the paramedics down to pick up I-Man's mess.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Doubleheader in gymnastics, Kentucky, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Missouri, Arkansas. It starts soon. And Booker is up next in New Jersey. Hello, Booker.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Booker, we are doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I've been watching the ongoing saga with Brandon Miller and all of what's going on. I was just sitting and watching. But one of your last callers, Squirrel, did he suggest, was he suggesting that this happened because the shooter happened to be from Baltimore or Washington?
You could infer that, yes.
Yeah, well, now, wait. Now, when guys go out to recruit, do they put geographical boundaries in the SEC about where they're going to bring players in from?
No, they do not.
I mean, that's asinine. He mentioned 55. You familiar with what is it, 82 that runs out of Tuscaloosa going down to Mississippi?
Yes, sir.
I was on a bus on my college football team in 1962. We went through Tuscaloosa. We were going to Grambling, Louisiana. I won't name my school. It might give up my last name. And we were stopped when we crossed into Mississippi by the Mississippi State Troopers. Guns aimed. He saw this Greyhound bus with all these African-Americans. And the guy came up on it because he thought it was something in the driver, because all the drivers were Caucasian at that time. Well, where are you taking all of these? And he used the N-word. He said, well, this is a football team. Football? These big blanks? Why, if they were here, they should be picking cotton. And the guy came up on there with a sawed-off shotgun just to let us know that if we were there for trouble, we'd come to the wrong place. We were only going down to play Grambling. And by the time we got to Grambling, nobody wanted to play football. We got beat 55 to nothing because we wanted to get back to South Carolina. Now, that's doing
African-American the Booker, was Eddie coaching at the time? I assume he was.
Yeah.
Sure.
I knew Eddie Robinson. Here I go. I used to pick him up at the airport and sometime at the train station in Columbia, South Carolina, because the president of the school that I attended was also the president of the college where Eddie Robinson attended.
Right.
And Eddie Robinson was one of his favorite students. I used to pick him up when he would come to Columbia to visit the college president there because he was like his son. So I knew him very well up close and personal.
But Booker, I will tell you, I caught Coach Robinson late in his career, but I worked in Louisiana. I've told the story years ago, but I called him one day and said, I'd like to spend some time around the program. And he said, well, I got an idea. He said, you come over. And I rode the bus from Grambling to Itabena, Mississippi.
That's correct.
And he let me spend the entire weekend in the locker room at dinner. I sat with him on the bus. And I will tell you, and it was more than 40 years ago, it remains one of the most memorable and meaningful weekends I've ever had in my profession.
Well, he was a gentleman back in the day when we played, and they still had Buck Buchanan was still playing, and a big guy that played for the
Hey, by the way, Booker, he invited me on one more trip down to Miami for the Florida, the Orange Blossom Classic at the end of the year.
The Orange Blossom Classic.
And the night before, and talk about a memory, right before he died, he invited me up to the podium after the man who was the guest speaker, and he introduced me to him, and I spent a few minutes with both Coach Rob and this man. It was Jesse Owen.
Wow. The Ohio State phenom.
I mean, I have I mean, talk about two people that helped change. I mean, Jesse Owen changed the world. Coach Robinson changed the way we view football. Hey, thank you so much, Booker. What a memorable phone call that was. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.